This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Michael K. is on the radio today, and he ain't afraid to say what he's thinking. Is on the radio today. Turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
Hey, this is Greg Buttle, and you're listening to The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN. That's right. It used to be The Buttle Show, but now it's The K. Show.
And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed The Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Friday. It's December 4th. It's 2020. Kind of a dreary day. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, and you. Now, we're all apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, that's your responsibility. And I just want to say right off the bat that I am doing this show under protest. I am doing the show with an incredible amount of trepidation.
Interesting.
So I'm 59 years old. On Saturday, I'll be 53. And I'm sitting where I do the show, my office in my house. I'm sitting on the couch at about 11 o'clock in the morning. And I'm on the phone. And out of the corner of my eye, I see a mouse. A black mouse. 59 years old. I have never seen a mouse in my house or any place that I live, ever. And I'm petrified. Now, Don, squeamish in a sense because I lived in the South Bronx in an apartment building. And if you go to bed at night and you turn on the lights in the kitchen, there were roaches all over the floor. That's just, that's city living in the Bronx when I was growing up. But I've never seen a mouse. Ever. And I truly believe, Don, that Peter, his released mouse, has made its way up to my house.
That'd be something.
Leroy.
I am so ticked off. And I jumped up and I told Jody there was a mouse and she started laughing at me.
Did you yell, "I will not stand for infestation"?
I said, "You better call an exterminator because I'm not doing the show in there." So she said, "Well, then move the camera into another room." I said, "They must be all over the place. I don't know what to do."
So did anyone come yet?
I keep looking at the floor here.
Well, has anyone come?
No. I mean, they're not on call.
Seems like everything you've got going in your life is basically on call.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want to get too into it, but whenever we hear these stories, Peter, on our Zoom meetings, like something happened in life, and then immediately it's taken care of.
Right.
He's able to go somewhere immediately. Where other people might
have
to.
Well, we're in the middle of a pandemic. I don't want somebody coming in my house, so that's a problem, too.
I understand that. But I'm just, you just got a guy for everything. So
I don't have a guy for this.
Well, I got to tell you, you make fun of me, but the benefit of having cats comes into play right now.
That's what Jody said.
Because it's a non-issue. And if the mouse does get into the house, which does happen on occasion, it's taken care of. They bat it around like a bunny.
Dead.
And then you pick it up and throw it out.
She used to have a mouse, and she said what they do is like they bat it around and kill it, and then they have it in their mouth, and they bring it to you.
Yeah,
I don't want
much.
It.
I know you don't want it, but it's an exterminator without having to pay for one.
Yeah,
right, Peter?
You have to smell the urine in the sandbox.
But the whole idea, urine. And it's very rare, okay? When it does happen on the rarest of occasions, it will happen because they got into the garage or somehow, and then that's usually where it gets taken care of because the cats want to go out there. But instinctually, the mouse will not go into a house where cats reside. They just know that that's a dangerous thing. So, can you have a nice little cat?
Do you guys see? You have Yes On in front of you?
Oh, sure.
They already have the font up. Michael K. spots a mouse in his house.
that's the Open Football Friday, ladies and gentlemen.
Don, do you feel that when this happened to me, Michael was remotely sympathetic?
No.
It feels more like poetic justice than anything else.
Well, everything in life is poetic justice. I just remember the look on your face. You happened to be on camera when you saw it. nobody, I wasn't on camera. I was talking to somebody on the phone. And I, the person I was talking to on the phone had no idea because I mimed it all to Jody when I jumped. And she knew that I was talking about Pepino had come into the house.
The best way to describe what makes the mouse so unnerving, because they're kind of cute, they're small, whatever. The unnerving thing, Michael, tell me if you agree, is the darting movement.
Now, this one was moving like he owned the place.
What? It wasn't even moving quickly?
No, it had like a swagger to it.
Wow.
Yeah, that was unnerving to me. I would rather the dart, because then I could like convince myself it wasn't really happening. I just saw something.
Mom. But this was walking like George Jefferson.
Yes, exactly. Oh,
swinging his arms behind his back, having a good old time.
You know what? Yeah. That's further evidence on how it's the same mouse, Peter. Moving on up to the big time.
Oh, my gosh,
you're
right.
Without saying where Michael lives, no offense to you, but you would have to say, from a resident standpoint, he's moving on up if it's your mouse.
Well, yeah, particularly from this apartment to Michael's palatial estate.
Right.
Yeah,
so that's why he's strutting around.
Yes, just showed the picture of how Peter reacted when he saw the mouse.
See?
I will tell you this, though. That mouse has great, great mobility to get from your place to mine. That's a long haul.
Very impressive.
All right, so Don mentioned it's a football Friday. Let's get right to it. And we start with the Big Blue Report, brought to you by Two by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. We got the Gents against Seattle, in Seattle, and they don't have their starting quarterback. He's been listed as probable, and we've been saying Daniel Jones is not playing. He's just not. So it's Colt McCoy. He's doubtful. That's the official list is doubtful. Well, we've been telling you since he got hurt. I can't believe they brought him back in the game. Let alone have him play this game. And Don has said over and over, they should probably sit him this game and next week. Because if somebody continues to play with a hamstring that's tweaked, it is going to pull, and then you're going to be out for the rest of the year. So what can Colt McCoy do against a Seattle team that is not the Legion of Boom anymore? It's just not. It's not that team. They've got players that can play, though. I don't know if you've been following it, everybody, but Jamal Adams... Remember when Greg Williams said he's going to be bored in that defensive scheme?
Right.
He doesn't seem very bored. He has 6.5 sacks and also 12 other quarterback hits. So he's constantly in the backfield. And is Colt McCoy going to be able to get away from him? And are the Giants going to be able to put any points on the board? Now, the Giant defense is pretty good. It's a pretty stout defense. But is it good enough to stop Russell Wilson and the combination of Wilson and Metcalf? I mean, Metcalf runs a 4.34, a 4.384, and he punishes people. He punished Darius Slay the other day. Just punished him. So James Bradbury's probably going to be on him, and he's going to be on our show in the 5 o'clock hour. Don, do you see a scenario where the Giants win this game? Because I don't think that the Giant offense could outscore the Seattle offense. So can the Giant defense create a couple of scores on their own? I don't see it happening.
See, that's the X factor. If you tell me the Giants won this game, it's going to be because Russell Wilson threw a couple of picks, they get a turnover, they get something great on special teams. I mean, that's what you're going to need here, because no offense to Colt McCoy, he is what he is. He's a veteran backup quarterback that is supposed to do what he did in the second half of the Cincinnati game. All right, we lost our starting quarterback. He's going to come in. Don't screw anything up. We've got a lead here. Take what the defense gives you, which he did. They got a turnover in the red zone, held the ball, got the 3 points that they needed, and they won the game. But now you're going to Seattle to take on a team that I think is in the conversation, guys, that could come out of the NFC, right? I mean, who's clearly better than Seattle?
Might be a little bit of a preview. If the Giants win the division, they're going to play Seattle probably. In MetLife.
That's right.
There's different ways it could break down, but that's a possibility.
So you're just going to need some help for him, because I don't think he's going to have extended drives. Now, if you remember, I guess it was Keyshawn Johnson we had on Tuesday. So, you know, he's mobile, and you did see that in Cincinnati, where they're able to create some plays where he's able to run for some yardage. Not like Daniel Jones, but he's not stationary. And I think given a week, Jason Garrett could put together a game plan that could accentuate his talents. But are you going to light it up? You know, I think they're going to put 9 men in the box. They're going to take the run away, and they're going to say, go ahead, Colt, see if you could beat us with your arm. And now you're not managing the game then, are you? Because now if that's going to be the case and you're going to have to throw the ball, you know, 30 plus times because they take the run away, well, then you're not managing anymore. Now you're going to have to go out there and make plays. Now, from the defensive standpoint, you look at comparable offenses. Pittsburgh, 26 points. That's how much the Giants gave up. All right? Cowboys with Dak healthy for the majority of that game, 37 points. So they didn't fare very well.
But you'd say they're better than they were then.
Right. And also not all those points came off of the offense, because the defense supplied some opportunities for Dallas in that game too. Tom Brady scored 25 points. All right? So they have faced good quarterbacks and didn't get blown out. They faced Ben Roethlisberger, didn't get blown out. Faced Tom Brady, didn't get blown out. Faced Dak Prescott, they hung. So I think this defense can do some things, but I think Seattle is going to score north of 21 points. I'm comfortable in saying that, even if the Giants play well. So can the Giants score north of 21 points to win this game? And I have a difficult time believing that unless the defense gets a pick six, special teams has a punt or kick return, or they get favorable field position because the defense just plays out of their mind and gets a turnover. If you tell me the Seahawks play a clean game, how do the Giants win? I don't see it.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that way too. But I mean, the big question when you watch NFL football and why it's so popular, are they going to win by 10.5? That's the spread.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. I mean, I think that Vegas has put it right at the spot where you have to consider taking the Giants.
They're so
even good with a backup quarterback.
They're so damn good, Vegas. Because this game, guys, you guys just talked through it. I echo your sentiment completely. You can't like the Giants to beat Seattle. Seattle is a flawed version of the Seahawks. We know that. This is not the Legion of Boom. Earl Thomas isn't walking through that locker room door, okay? Right. This is not. Neither is Richard Sherman. It ain't that team. We know that. But we all like the Seahawks to win. But that number is just one that feels like exactly way too much.
Well, the Giants have played 11 games. And only once have they lost a game by more than 10 points. And that was the San Francisco game. So every game they have lost by, the six other games that they've lost have been by 10 points or less. So Seattle's going to try to do something that has only been done once to the Giants all year, by beating by more than 10.
And we can ask R.J. Bell later what he thinks Daniel Jones is worth. But, you know, and he'll always say, oh, you know, 3 points. That's my guess.
Does he ever go three? I mean, it's usually like a point or two.
With quarterbacks, I think he'll say it could be three. With a great quarterback like Rodgers, at 6 or 7.
I bet you he says that number's still at least like 9 with Jones healthy.
Well, let's remember asking that. So 6 of the Giants' last 7 games have been decided by 3 points or fewer. So they play close games.
But again,
including their victories, too. They don't blow anybody out either.
No, but this is a full Colt McCoy vehicle.
Yes.
When Colt had the reins for Washington a year or two ago, it was not pretty. And maybe this will be different, but I have trouble believing that he's not a significant step back for this team.
Oh, he is. Now, you guys know how I feel about Joseph Judge, right?
Sure. You Hall of Fame Joe.
He does things that just... they just impress you. I don't know if either of you guys saw this, but he was on his Zoom call with the media today, and he's wearing a floppy hat and a black pullover, and they're both emblazoned with the logo of Ole Miss. Now, he played for Mississippi State. Evan Engram played for Ole Miss. They made a bet on the Egg Bowl that took place, and Ole Miss won, and Joe Judge is sitting there in front of a camera with Ole Miss gear on. And when everybody said, you know, he's going to come in and be Bill Belichick, Bill Belichick would never do that.
No.
So I think he's a disciplinarian. I think he's very strict and tough, but I don't think he's a jackwagon. I think that there's some humanity there, and I think that he knows how to have a little bit of fun, and that's why I believe that it can work long-term for this guy. I think he's turned this around. He's changed the culture. They're still not a great team because they don't have great players yet at enough positions. But they're accountable. They play hard. They're disciplined. And he could still do something like this. I like that. Yeah, and I'm not just going off the reservation here. I think that's great when a coach or a manager can show some humor and humanity.
And listen, we base everything around the greatest coach of the franchise, right? And everybody seems to agree Bill Parcells is the gold standard of coaches for the Giants. That was what Bill was. Bill could be a disciplinarian, but he could have fun. You know, he'd make fun of his players. He had a sense of humor. You know what he was? He was himself. And that's what we wondered when Joe took over. Like, I didn't know if he was going to be a Bill Belichick clone. I didn't know the guy. But over the last few months of getting to know him and seeing him coach, he's his own person. Now, he's got a lot of Bill tendencies, but it's not forced. It's, hey, that's just the kind of guy that he is. But he's his own man. He can be funny. He can be lighthearted. We saw that in training camp when he jumped in the mud with the players. Players seemed to like him. He showed a human side with the Logan situation with his wife and her and the pregnancy. So he is, I think, his own man, and I think that's important in New York, Michael, because you're not hiding behind a rock. You're coaching a team that is significantly popular in this region, all right? And people are going to know who you are, and they're going to judge you. No, part of Gase's problem is that he's unlikable. Now, there hasn't been a lot to defend, but still, you come across unlikable and you start to lose. Now you got no hope.
Joe,
you got no shot. But Peter, if you're at least likable and seem like you're yourself and you're your own man, then people might root for you.
Adam Gase turned out to be what we were worried Joe Judge could be.
Good point. Great way to put it.
He's
a humorless slug.
Humorless, a drip with nothing personality-wise, and proves nothing on the field. Joe Judge has been sort of the exact opposite. The team's played pretty well. You could argue they've overachieved for what they have right now. And he's turned out to actually have a personality. Bill Belichick's never getting out there wearing a full Ole Miss outfit.
No way.
Not happening. No way. This guy's his own man. He is.
But there's also the fine line where you don't want to become a clown show either.
But he's not even close to that line.
Right. Yeah, so you don't want to, like, come in here and just, like, everything's a goof and not taking things seriously. No, this is a guy. He's a human being. He shows a human side. Bill only gets away with what he does is because he wins all the time. You know, so, yeah, it's hard to be that way when you've got a 4-7 football team. You know, so if he was 11-0, he could do whatever he wants. But he shows a human side. You can root for that. And also the team playing pretty decently under him.
And everybody always tells you that Belichick is a great guy when he's away from the cameras and he's got a great sense of humor. But, you know, then you hear people say, I don't want to play for the Patriots. It's too hard. Now, I think it's hard to play for a coach like Joe Judge because he's a disciplinarian. But if there's a fun aspect to it, I think that's what Parcells had that was so brilliant. He could jab players, jab them, and then make them laugh and show some love. So it's got to be, they rule with an iron glove, but it's got to be a velvet touch. I've been told that I'm like that.
Hey, they play for him. They like him. I mean, just the fact that you make the bet with the coach.
Right.
It shows you that there's a relationship there. And oh, by the way, it's not a relationship with the player guys that is like Lawrence Taylor, that's like the best player on the team. I mean, Ingram's had his ups and downs, but there's a comfort level where I have a relationship with a coach that I even offered to bet him about that game. You know, so that means something too.
I like it. That's the Big Blue Report brought to you by Two by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit Two by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. We have a lot to do today. We have the Cover 3 Trivia Contest. RJ Bell will make a special Friday appearance. We're going to have James Bradbury as well. Bill Madden in the 6 o'clock hour after ENN. Talk about his really brilliant book about Tom Seaver. But before we break, and you know the phone number, we want to take your phone call as well. I just want to say a little something about George King.
Hmm.
George King, this week, retired from the New York Post. And he has covered the Yankees for the Post for, I believe, about 25 years. So there's a generation of kids that have become adults that when they pick up the Post and they want to read about the Yankees, they're reading George King's copy. And George King, the best way I could put it, is an absolute throwback. He lives and breathes baseball. He does his job the way old-time writers used to do it. He works the bars after games. He always stays in the team hotel because he knows that sometimes you get a story there. He was a creature of habit. You know, we'd occasionally be in the same hotel. And every day at the same time, George would walk into the workout room on the road with a couple of newspapers and get on the exercise bike for about an hour and read everything and then go upstairs and do his books and stuff like that. He was a throwback to the old-time baseball writers. He talked to everybody in the clubhouse. He'd get information from everybody. And he is going to be missed. He is that good and that special and that much from another era that I don't think we're ever going to find again. He was a late forced joiner of Twitter. I'm sure the Post made him do it, but that's not how he did his job. Yes, he's showing the picture of George right now. He's just the best. He's just a great guy. You could sit, talk baseball with him. You could talk anything with him. He loved his beer, and he was just an unbelievable guy. So the George King the Third era ended this week at the Post. I don't know who the Post is going to put on the Yankees. The Post always looked at the Yankees as their most important beat, and George King held it down, held it steady, held it strong for 25 years. So he just decided sometime in the middle of this season, you know what, it was time. It was time to go. I'm sure this whole pandemic and the hoops you had to jump through just to get to the ballpark and cover the team, certainly not his thing. I've spoken to him. He said that wasn't it. He just felt that it was time. So, George, best of luck in whatever you do next. Enjoy your retirement. Have fun with your wife wherever you guys may travel or go. But you will certainly be missed by people around New York and sports fans and people that have read the Post for the last quarter century.
You know, when Doc Emmerich retired, Michael, it was the same attitude. Well, it's not the pandemic, but you just wonder how much of it played a role.
It's heavy, Don. It takes a lot out of you. It really does.
But what it also, I think it kind of exposes, and you see the writing on the wall, because we've talked about it from an announcer standpoint. Are they ever going to have us just do it off the monitor and not travel? You're starting to see in a world now, what Zoom has taught us is that, you know, you can get the job done without those personal relationships. Now, I don't think you could do it exceptionally well like George King did and some of the old school guys did, like, say, going to the bars, finding that hidden story. But, you know, the way the media is right now is that, unfortunately, a lot of outlets are realizing, do we really need that kind of in-depth coverage? And it's expensive sometimes to be able to do it that way. And I think the pandemic has kind of exposed that treetops might be enough for a lot of these newspapers and outlets that are struggling financially, and that's a shame because you're going to really miss out on great stories and great angles that guys like George King were able to produce because of the legwork.
Yeah, I mean, those type of stories that George would get and other people can't get was because he made a point. He almost checked in with all 25 guys on the team in the clubhouse. You'd see him sidle up to them with his notebook and just start, sometimes without the notebook, just to get background stuff. And this year, and if it remains this way moving forward, the days of that are over. The great reporters work the room and talk to people. You can't do that on Zoom. You can't get personal on Zoom. And George was a guy who worked the room like nobody else. And I'm sure that everybody that competed against him, they opened the Post with trepidation the next day to see, or what did he, well, not now you see it on Twitter right away. What did he have? Right. What we didn't have. And he got things that people didn't get because he worked that room like a maniac. But a great guy, a throwback guy, an old school guy, and I wish him only the best. He was just a delight to be around, and you know, he's quick with a quip, and everybody liked him. Nobody didn't like George King.
That's a talent, man. Because the way you described it, you would think would be kind of an irritant to players that you didn't necessarily trust them. So that really, that's a credit to him, Michael, to do that
good.
And not be a nudge.
He was good. He was good. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Let's take a quick time out. We'll take some phone calls. Some news about the Jets as well. We'll get to that. They have a game that Don touched on against the Raiders, and you know, they actually are less of an underdog than the Giants are. And that's simply because the game's going to be played at MetLife. But we'll talk
and
about
Raiders
that.
And the Raiders
are
not the Seahawks.
Did I say Seahawks?
No, I'm saying the Raiders are not nearly as good
But if that game was in Vegas, they'd be about a 12-point underdog.
And I think if Seattle was at MetLife against
You think it'd still
Jets,
be 10.5?
It'd probably be 12 or 13, right, Peter?
No, maybe but more. If Seattle was in MetLife against the Giants, what do you think it would be?
Well, you go by that swing, right? So it'd probably be
7.5.
7.5.
Yeah, I wonder if, yeah. I mean, that's the old wives' tale. You know, home field is 3 points. Is it really 3 points without fans?
I think they've said it's more like 2, 1.5.
But in this case of not having to travel all the way to Seattle, right? That's we've all made that trek. That's rough. Brutal. 6 hours in the air.
When you start to land in Seattle and you look at their skyline, which is beautiful, it's a beautiful city, you really start to weep because you've been on the plane so long. I would get tears in my eyes. I hated that flight. Hated it. And if you've noticed, if you watch Yes, I don't do that many Yankee Seattle games in Seattle.
Yeah, but gorgeous. I've never been to Seattle, but I've made that trek.
What a city.
With Vancouver. Vancouver is unbelievable. I'm assuming what makes Seattle great is what makes Vancouver great, because they're so close to each other. I think it's like a two-hour ride.
Vancouver's prettier than Seattle, I'm sorry.
You know in the old days, Don, when you'd walk through Times Square and there was like a peep show in every three stores?
Oh, the best. The good old days.
Well, in Seattle, every three stores is some kind of coffee shop.
That's just as exciting.
Not really. I do. Listen,
well, both gets your blood racing, right?
Nothing is better than what New York has done with Times Square and how it's become like Disneyland. But the city, New York, was way more fun and interesting. As a young kid getting his driver's license in 85, you know, going into the city, Peter, to go to the Village, go to Bleecker Bob's, get the imports.
Spark it up while you're driving.
Oh, yeah.
Taking in all those
little...
this
time, did he?
Sparking up the old Boubange.
Yeah. All right, let's take a brief time out. Towel off. Kayla Greco Rosenberg. And you remember, you can listen to us on your smart speaker. It's easy. How do you do it, Peter? You say...
Whatever your... Echo or...
Alexa.
Or what's the other one?
Genoitney.
Bob!
Play Bob. ESPN New York.
No, Bob is not one of them. There's another one. Google.
Yeah, just say play ESPN New York.
Boom.
And if you can navigate our app, which I know is very difficult, do it that way.
The app, getting through the ESPN app to find radio is a bit of a struggle, but for everyone under 40, it's possible.
Well, also, if you do have a degree from MIT, I think you can also do it off the app. But otherwise, use the smart speaker, or you could watch us on Yes and listen on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
I saw the Jets and the Raiders at MetLife. Raiders just came off an awful loss. And now Adam Schefter reporting that John Gruden says that Josh Jacobs, Jonathan Abram, and Cleveland Farrell are out for Sunday's game against the Jets. Now, yesterday, Adam Gase kind of took some responsibility for not doing right by Sam Darnold. He has not improved him. But, of course, Sam Darnold, being the guy that he is today, said he takes responsibility for not playing well. Here's Sam.
First of all, I take full responsibility for, you know, the way I've played. You know, I just haven't played well enough. And again, like I continue to say every single week, we have great people in this organization. And so with that being said, you know, everyone's going to, you know, take blame for certain parts of us not winning games. But again, for me personally, I got to play better and put the team in the right positions to be able to win games and, you know, make it close at the end.
Now, that's Sam being Sam. Now, according to Adam Schefter on SportsCenter today, don't look for Gase to stick and don't look for Darnold to stick. Here's Adam.
Listen, when you have a winless season, the way the Jets are in the midst of right now, the two people that always come front and center to the criticism are the coach and the quarterback. And I think that most people don't believe that Adam Gase is going to be the New York Jets head coach into next season. And most people wonder if Sam Darnold will be there. And if the Jets finish with the top pick in the draft or the top two picks, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields are sitting there. Most people believe they go in that direction. And that means that Sam Darnold's playing somewhere else. And the new Jets quarterback is being coached by somebody else. That's where we're at in this season. When you don't win a game and you're into December, the coach and the quarterback are going to be called into question. That's been the case in New York. And that's what the New York Jets fans want to know. When are the New York Jets making the coaching change?
And finally, Rich Cimini, who's covered the Jets for over a quarter of a century, and that is not hyperbole. He's been there a while. He was on with Freddie and Fitz, and he believes that Sam Darnold is done, even if the Jets get the number two overall pick. Here's Rich.
I think they're going to replace Sam no matter what happens the rest of the year. I think the Jets, you know, if they get the number one pick, and Trevor Lawrence is in the draft, it's a no-brainer. You have to take him. I mean, he's a one. You talk to any talent evaluator, and they'll tell you he's a once-in-a-decade prospect. You take him. You don't even think twice. But knowing the Jets, speaking of Jets things to do, the Jets, Jets will win a game. It'll cost them the first pick. They'll end up with the second pick. But you know what, guys? I think even if they ended up with the second pick, I think they would take the next quarterback, whether, you know, it's Trey Lance or Justin Fields. So I do think Sam Darnold's time with the Jets is coming to an end.
Now, the way that Sam Darnold could stop all this talk is to win three games out of the last five.
Well, then there's no choice.
But even if he wins two, then you bring other people into the equation to get that second pick as well. I don't think they'd take Lance. I think that they would take Fields. I think they would take, I know they would take Lawrence, but Sam Darnold has his fate in his hands. Now, he obviously has to overcome a defense that's not perfect and some holes in the offensive line, but if he steps up his game and wins one game, the Jaguars win the tiebreak, and I don't think they're going to win another game. All of a sudden, you make it difficult for the next coach. Is it Sam or is it Fields? I don't think it's difficult if it's Sam or Trevor Lawrence. So
no.
I think Sam could make it tougher.
He could, but again, where's the win coming? You know, you're Raiders.
But what are the Raiders after they got embarrassed last week? What if the Raiders come here and lay an egg?
Well, yeah, they could.
They could.
That's a winnable. Right. I'm not saying it's likely. They won't. The Jets should not win, but they could win.
All right. So at Seattle, at the Rams, home against Cleveland, at New England. So
Cleveland could happen.
So here's what it comes down to. If they lose to the Raiders, forget the next 2 weeks. They're not winning in Seattle or Los Angeles, you wouldn't think. So then it comes down to Cleveland and New England. And I think New England may end up needing that game, guys.
Yeah. New England's playing that hard, no matter what.
You know, New England's under 500, but they're going to be against the Chargers, an excellent chance to get to 6-6, and they're going to find their way to where that game could be meaningful. And if it's meaningful, then I think it's off the board, right? You know, then Bill Belichick is not going to have, you know, his season ruined by losing to an 0-15 football team.
He won't have it.
You know, so we'll see. I mean, but Sam playing well now, the way they played, the way the defense played against Miami, if Sam played better, they had a shot against Miami, right? They lost 20-3, right? And that game was, what, like 13-3 at the half?
Yeah.
Something like that. And there was like a missed 29-yard field goal by Castillo that could have made it a 13-6 game. So a better Sam could have beaten Miami. So I guess what if a better Sam could have beaten Miami, then can it beat the Raiders? Can it beat the Browns at home?
He has his fate in his hands. If he loves the Jets and wants to be in New York, win a couple of games and make the difficult decision for them. Video chatting with the family this holiday season. We've got the perfect guest for everyone's virtual gathering. New York Jets quarterback Sam Darnold. You just heard us talking about him. It's 98.7 ESPN Sam and the Fam Sweepstakes. Here's how you win. Send us a brief message telling us why Sam should hang with your family for a 30-minute virtual huddle. Send that message to us at 987ESPN@gmail.com. That's 987ESPN@gmail.com. Winners will each get a one-of-a-kind experience with friends and family to have a virtual hangout with Sam Darnold. It's all from your home for the hookup and your home for the hangout, 98.7 ESPN. We'll come back, and we're going to take some phone calls, but I do want to note something on a sad note. Mike Shalen, many years ago, I'd say 30 years ago, maybe even more, 40 years ago, covered the Yankees for the New York Post. And then he moved to Boston and worked for the Boston Herald and covered the Red Sox. Loved baseball. Great guy. Last couple of years, he became the official scorer for the Red Sox at Fenway Park. And he was a big fan of the show. And he would text me. He'd watch the show or, you know, consume it any other way that you could in Boston, and he would text me things that we were talking about. And about 5-6 months ago, he started to battle brain cancer, and he passed away today. And just, I mean, it's become cliche what an awful year this is. And it just keeps getting worse. So this guy, you know, relatively young, loved sports, loved baseball, was a fixture in Boston all these years. So just wanted to talk about him just a little bit because he was such a big fan of the show. And he will be missed, and I hope that his family handles this the best way you can, and we offer our condolences. And to Mike Shallon, we say rest in peace, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Now, I don't know if Peter's seen this, but Kyrie Irving, did you see this, Peter?
What did Kyrie do?
He's a different bird. So, essentially, I guess he's not going to talk with the media this year.
So that's what he says?
Well, here's what he says. He wrote a note. COVID-19 has impacted us all in many ways, so I pray for the safety and health of our communities domestically and abroad. I am truly excited for the season to start. I am also praying that everyone remains safe and healthy throughout this journey. Instead of speaking to the media today, I am issuing a statement to ensure that my message is conveyed properly. I am committed to show up to work every day, ready to have fun, compete, perform, and win championships alongside my teammates and colleagues in the Net organization. My goal this season is to let my work on and off the court speak for itself. And then he quotes Peter, Don.
Okay.
Life hit differently this year.
Wow.
And it requires us, it requires me to move differently. So this is the beginning of that change.
All right. Now, you can't kill him for any of the things he's saying because it is true with COVID and all that. But tell me that is not just somebody who doesn't want to have to deal with the media, and this is a very convenient way of not having to do that now.
I think it's an indictment on the Net organization. I think that Durant and Irving are so big that they can't tell them to do anything. I mean, part of your rules of engagement of signing a professional contract is to talk with the media because that is your connection to the fans.
You know, we're going to have Bill Madden on today to talk about his book, the Tom Seaver book. And most of these stories, like Bill did a great job of talking to Tom before he passed away, talking to his wife, Nancy, talking to the surviving members of the 69 Mets. But a lot of it came from the interaction with the media. Talking after the game. How many times during that book, Michael, did you hear what Tom Seaver said after the game?
Right.
Or joked with reporters? You know, so I know the media is the villain. Media is the bad guy. The fans don't care about the media. But a lot of the cuts that we play on this show, a lot of the reaction is coming from a reporter asking a question. So when he doesn't speak, I guess the fans won't care if he goes out and scores 30 points a night and the Nets go 70-2 this year. But a kind of cool season with a lot of great story. The reaction from those players is going to be important to kind of forward their brand.
I don't get it.
And to forward what they're doing. And the guy just doesn't feel like doing it. And, you know, they're basically the coaches of the team.
You know what bothers me?
You don't have to talk with the people. I mean, you don't even have to interact. It's Zoom.
You know what bothers me?
What? That it hit different?
Well, that he used hit different that way. It was the wrong. It's made it negative.
Right.
No, what bothers me is I understand having a distaste for us, for talk show hosts. I do. We give opinions, and there could be days when we're hard on people, whether we think so or not, and it could be like, this person's annoying. They don't do my job. Who are they to go on and wax poetic? Because we give opinions out of school sometimes. It's what we do. This refusal to talk to the media that comes and asks them basic questions after games, as if these guys are really... I want to know how often anyone who covers the Nets comes to interview them after a game and then writes some salacious story that you'd be upset about. Like, what are they mad at them for?
What is Kyrie mad at anything? He's an incredibly good-looking guy, phenomenally talented, and a truckload of money. Why is he always butting heads with everybody?
He just doesn't want to have to do it. I'm sure none of the players probably want to do it.
But forget about even this, okay? He didn't get along with his teammates in Boston. He didn't want to be there. What's this or be so unhappy? He didn't like playing with LeBron When is he happy?
But we all know people like this, Michael. Let's face it. There's a lot of things you do during the course of your day. No matter how great your life is, there's things that you just don't feel like doing. And I guess these guys feel like they have the power to get rid of all the things they don't feel like doing.
Well, they do.
Yeah, and they're taking advantage.
I kind of commend them for that.
You know, and but Peter, what I think Kyrie either doesn't understand or doesn't care. Somebody is going to have to do the Zoom after the game. Right? The Nets aren't going to be getting away with no players talking. So that means now some other member of the team is going to have to pick up the slack and now talk for you. So you have a big game, that means, or let's say you have a lousy game. Now somebody else is going to have to go on that Zoom and talk about you. So is that fair?
And it's a great point you bring up, Don, because when certain players don't want to talk on certain days, like they leave the clubhouse when they had a bad game, the players get angry. Forget about the media, because they've got to pick up the slack. Why did Joe have a bad game? Instead of asking Joe, why did you have a bad game?
Now, I guess KD's going to talk to the media, so that think about how much more he's going to have to speak now. Because there might have been some games where KD wouldn't talk to the media because he didn't have that great of a game. But between Kyrie and KD, one of the two would probably talk after the game. Now KD's probably going to talk after every game.
The bottom line with the Nets, I understand the players having the power because the players are the power. But when you give them so much power, unchecked power, well, Kenny Atkinson got fired because of them. They went to Joe Tsai and they said they didn't like Kenny. He's out. Guy lost his job because of it. Now this guy's saying, you know, this year hit differently, so this is the way things are going to be. And you let him do it? And those guys could absolutely do anything, and there's no check on them, none. So they better win a championship. LeBron talks to the media all the time. The biggest stars always talk to the media because they know that's part of their job. And don't come at us with, they don't owe you anything. They owe you something, and they do kind of owe us things. We're free publicity for them. We talk about them. We write about them. We broadcast them. They become even more famous. I once told Paul O'Neill, you don't like crowds around you after games? Then you should have become a fencer. There's not that much media. And there's not much, that much media. You know what? You wouldn't be that famous. There wouldn't be 30 people around you if you were a fencer. But you choose something that's popular, there's going to be people that are interested in hearing what you have to say. And that's why you make millions and millions of dollars. Fencers don't. Let's go to the phones.
Please.
Let's go to Mike in Croton-on-the-Hudson. Mike.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right, I got a couple of questions.
Go for it. All right, goodbye, Mike. I don't have the time nor the patience today.
If I got to read your mind for the question, we'll move on.
He gone. Isaiah in North Bergen.
Yeah, what's up, guys? How you doing? Happy Friday.
Same to you, my friend.
You too.
Yeah, before I get to my point, I just want to say, Don, you need to do a top five of the Don shows, and if yesterday is not one or two, it's fraudulent. I'll tell you that right now.
Top five Don shows?
Not
top
Don
five
shows. You mean Daily Dons, right?
Yeah, Daily Dons. There you go. Right. I'm sorry.
Because there's too many Don shows to pare down
the bottom. And I got to say, and Isaiah, we'll let you make your point about the Giants. The beauty of this show is it went there. Like, you couldn't predict that to happen. I couldn't predict that to happen. You know, I figure I'm going to give my list, and then we're going to argue over who belongs on the list or not. Things come out of nowhere, and they're just pure gold.
Yeah, I mean, but did anybody expect this lunatic over here to say that John Lennon was the front man for the Beatles?
No, a lot of people didn't expect me to get so emotional about it, and I understand that. My favorite thing throughout the day was hearing one person go, "You are a moron. No one on earth agrees with you," followed by the immediate next tweet, "Could not agree with you more. This is 100% correct."
No.
So it's obviously there's something about this take that is very split among people. I don't understand
it. It's not really split. It's like 99 to 1.
Don, are you as God as my witness?
I follow the Twitter. Those people are yo-yos too.
First of all, real quick, I spoke to my brother who completely disagreed with me.
I know. He ripped me on Twitter.
But when I spoke to him, also agreed with me 100% that you are both wrong to think that I'm crazy for thinking it. It is a completely natural thing that people
see, but
think.
That's a beautiful thing for brother to do. He doesn't want to completely trash his brother. He knows you're out of your mind, that you're a lunatic. You are what you ignorance. Call Tony Dungy.
Because not ignorant people, just ignorant on the subject. That's all.
By the way, if you want to know the part that makes me pop a vein, for as much of an everyman as Don is, you are such a troll, D-nozzle arguer at times. Do you know how obnoxious it is that you go, you don't know, and it comes from ignorance in the middle of an argument?
Well, because yours did. I'm trying to save you.
No, it's you're like not.
You see what you started, Isaiah?
But you
like
didn't
me
save
arguing
me.
About heart surgery. That it was at that level. You just and it's and I'm just.
But
saying,
Don, the research doesn't
just,
support
no, you. Just
you.
Know.
But the research doesn't support that. You yes, can research it till you're blue in
the
face.
Opinion supports it.
What do you say?
The opinion supported it.
That's not enough, Don. He wrote more songs, started the band. You can't say it's insane to think that. You can say, I vehemently disagree, and in my heart and in my soul, I think of them as complete equals. That is totally fair.
Well,
I will not argue.
Don't be insulted by the ignorance part. I'm just saying, if you follow them, if you were a fan of them, you would not have had that opinion. That's all I'm saying.
But, Don... I grew up in America with parents who loved
know,
the Beatles.
Listen, everybody knows the Beatles, but if you follow them. One person.
Well, how old were you when they were out, Don?
Well, John sang
you didn't live through
Michael
the Beatles?
Showed that it wasn't that many. John sang the majority of the songs. Not true.
What do you mean?
Well,
yes, it is.
108 to 97. Or 107 to 98.
By the way, that's lead vocals. He was lead vocals on more. He also wrote more of their big hits. And it's also about the direction of the band. The first half, it leans John. My point is this. It's not that you're wrong. I can't say that you're wrong. But for you to say that I'm crazy, when to many, many, many people, you say the word Beatles, the first thing that pops in your head is John Lennon. For you to say that I'm crazy
no, I'm
for
calling
crazy.
Him
the
I'm
front
I'm saying that you're ignorant on the subject.
Or when they walk out onto Shea Stadium stage, arguably the biggest American performance of their career, they walk out to start the show. John grabs one mic, and Paul and George share the other mic. I'm crazy for saying John Lennon's
yeah,
the lead.
No, just ignorant on the subject. You keep saying crazy. I never called you crazy.
But
crazy
how is
would
that
say
ignorant?
That there's something
but
wrong.
Also, so Peter, what, as I stack fact after fact. Tell me what's ignorant, not just opinion.
Well, because we said that when the Beatles were in their infancy, it was John.
It wasn't infancy.
Well,
it was
the first
Beatlemania.
Couple of years. But then when they got into deeper stuff, then Paul McCartney had more lead vocals.
But again, we are straying away from the original argument. All right, if you want to say who is the more important Beatle, if you had to rank them in level of importance, then no, it's not a crazy opinion to say that you would put John ahead of Paul, although it's certainly up for debate. It's not a crazy opinion. When you say front man, no, there was never a front man to the Beatles. When I say front man, there's Jim Morrison. Like I said, the front man, it's the person you think of. As big as Keith Richards is, Mick Jagger is the front man of the Rolling Stones. There was not a front man for the Beatles.
Well,
so let's not lose what the actual top five was. And on that point...
Yeah, I that's fair. Well, that's fair. If it's specifically the word front man. But it kind of devolved beyond that. But yeah,
see, because of you people, everybody like puts this on me. You guys are so selfish and self-centered. You never let Isaiah make his giant point. Ever.
I didn't disconnect him. I kept saying, we'll get to your point, and then all of a sudden he's gone. I didn't disconnect
him. Now you're throwing RJ under the bus.
No, maybe he just hung up. I don't know, but Isaiah, please call back.
Isaiah actually on Twitter goes, I didn't get to make my Giants point, but I started another argument. My call was worth it.
Yeah, okay. Then everybody's good.
Seven laughing emojis.
Everybody's good.
See? How much did he really want to talk about the Giants? When they win, they lose. What can you do?
But this you could talk about forever.
I'm serious. This
also, why did you have to retweet that picture of me when I was young and fat? Now people are making all nasty comments on Twitter.
That was a nice Peter.
Well, it's a great picture, though. You look like a different person. You know
I am
looks
a different
like?
Person.
Don, it looks like Michael was like a former offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They used to call me Dave Remington in college, if you remember that name.
How big are you? How much you weigh there?
270?
No.
Yeah. How about the chest lettuce?
I mean, it's what's expected. Your shirt's wide open. It's not their chest hair. It's the fact that your shirt's open to your belly button.
Now, yes, that's the show. Look, I mean, it's a different face.
You're
dark. Nice dark hair, though.
Yeah, beautiful hair.
Look at that fat mug. That's why that's why I had the vertical stripes there. You know, you're trying to slim down.
You were happy, though. That was my
Oh, I was so happy, fat. Much happier fat than thin.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah. Eat what you want. Don't think about it. Can't worry about sugar. Can't worry about cholesterol. Go for it. By the way, thanks to you, Peter, I plugged in all my essentials into the New York Times when you'll get the vaccine thing.
You had to be better than me.
I can get it next week, I think.
No.
Oh, yeah. It was unbelievable. In where I live, we're not going to tip off where I live. I think I would be the 60,000th person to get it.
Where you live.
Yeah.
But,
and in the country, I think I'd be the 23rd after 23 million. That's a lot.
That's considerably better than me.
Yeah, Jody would be like get it after 250 million people in the country.
Well, she's younger than you, and she's a woman, and she's in better shape.
Well, true. She's not that much younger.
I mean,
you're very much younger than me.
She splits the difference.
No. She doesn't split the difference. She's way closer to me than she is to your age.
She seems so much younger, though.
Yes, that's true. Thank you. All right, something happened today in another market that we were talking about that we don't think could happen that easily here. So we'll talk about that and get your opinion as well. Then we've got R.J. Bell. We've got James Bradbury. We've got Bill Madden. We've got Peter's favorite, Cover 3 Trivia.
Oh, yeah. Plus our
and picks. And ENN.
Oh, yeah.
And our picks. Zoftik Show. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Michael K. Show.
I'm doing the show with an incredible amount of trepidation. I'm 59 years old. On Saturday, I'll be 53. I'm 57. I'll be 53 next Saturday. I'm sitting on the couch at about 11 o'clock in the morning. And out of the corner of my eye, I see a mouse. 59 years old. I have never seen a mouse in my house or any place that I live, ever. And I'm petrified. And I truly believe, Don, that Peter, his released mouse, has made its way up to my house.
That'd be something.
Leroy.
I am so ticked off.
This is the Michael K. Show.
You have Yes On in front of you?
Oh, sure.
They already have the font up. Michael K. spots a mouse in his house.
But that's the open font? Football Friday, ladies and gentlemen.
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, so this story really took me by surprise. In Chicago, for the last 16 years, a really fine broadcaster by the name of Len Casper has been the television voice of the Chicago Cubs. That's a great job. I mean, it's not the Yankee gig, but it's close.
Wow.
But it's a great job. And he was liked. He was liked by his bosses, loved by the fans. And today he announced that he was leaving Cubs television to take the White Sox radio job. Now, it's no secret, television broadcasters make more money than radio broadcasters. Mm. Maybe in some towns it's not as stark a difference, but there's always a difference. But that's beside the point. So you wonder, well, why would he do this? Was he forced out? And I made some phone calls today. He wasn't forced out. And then I got a hold of Len, and the bottom line is this. He believes that the greater art as a broadcaster is the art of broadcasting baseball on the radio. And it's really hard to argue with him. I love my gig on TV. But a play-by-play announcer on TV is more of a collaborative effort between you and the truck. You know, the people that are deciding what shots and you know, what graphics to put up. Radio, you're sitting there in front of a blank palette, a blank canvas, and you paint whatever you want to paint. You are the director, the producer, you're the announcer, you're everything. And baseball in the summer, people are taking their radios to the beach or the pool or whatever in the car, and that's what they—that's how they consume baseball. And a side note to this is, he also has always wanted to broadcast a World Series. And the worst part about being a TV broadcaster is when the playoffs come, you're out. Now, I get a chance to at least keep my toe in the water a little bit because we have pre- and post-games on, yes, but it's not the same as announcing on radio. You know, he was a television broadcaster for the Cubs when they won the World Series in 2017. He didn't broadcast the games. Joe Buck did. So he always wanted to broadcast a World Series game, and on radio he can. So he left the Cubs to go to the White Sox.
Wow.
Got me to thinking. I said, I got to bring Peter and Don into this.
Please.
And also our listeners. I thought to myself, what would happen if I switched from the Yankees to the Mets? I mean, he went from the Cubs to the White Sox. And I came up with this, Don, that on the first game, opening day at Citi Field, a Met fan would assassinate me.
It's a little strong, but close.
Strong.
But, I mean,
there would be.
I don't think Gary, I don't think is as polarizing as I am because of the fact that I do a radio show. But I don't think Gary would be embraced by Yankee fans because he's so associated with the Mets. And in Chicago, it gets done. Harry Carey went from the White Sox to the Cubs. Steve Stone went from the Cubs to the White Sox. And now Len Casper is going from the Cubs to the White Sox. I don't think it would work in New York, Don.
But it has happened in New York. Marty Glickman did the Giants for years on radio, which was significant because he was doing Giant games when they would be blacked out at home because that was the way it was back in the day. You know, where the NFL did not allow the home market to broadcast home games. They thought it would affect the attendance. With how ridiculous is that? So it wasn't like he went unnoticed doing radio games for the Giants, then went to, did the Jets at the end of his career. Right?
But didn't he lose the gig with the Giants? So I think there's a different feel to that other than just crossing over.
I'm trying to remember what the scenario was.
I know Marv went from the Knicks to the Nets, but I think there was time between the Knicks and the Nets. And he had lost his job at the Knicks.
You know, Howie did radio for the Rangers. He was doing all the games pretty much by the time he decided to leave for the better gig on television to do Islanders. And he got a lot of
flack. He got a lot of grief, though, right?
Yeah, but it ended up becoming a big deal. 20 years he did it, and a lot of people were sad to see him go. I think it's happened quite a bit. Well, Doc Emmerich started up backing up Marv Albert on radio for the Rangers.
And way back when, Red Barber went from the Dodgers to the Yankees.
And listen, do I think if, let's just say, something happened and Bob Papa switched with Bob Wischusen, I think they'd be like, oh, that's odd, but I don't think people would freak, right? I don't think so.
Right.
But for some reason in baseball, it just...
It means more. I'm sorry, the baseball announcer job is a bigger job for whatever reason.
That's a good point. I mean, football is 16 games.
Yeah, maybe
baseball, you're there 160.
And also, let's be real. I mean, people really don't want to listen to football. You listen to football if you're forced to. Baseball, you could be in a certain mood, but you'd rather listen. No offense, Michael. But, like, you could be sitting around, Don, on a summer day, and you want to be outside and just turn the game on the radio. Because, I mean, football, there's such a glaring difference between listening and watching. With baseball, so much of it can be just told to you.
But I also think Yankees and Mets have a different visceral feel because you really are part of a family. Like if John Sterling went over to the Mets or Susan Waldman went over to broadcast the Mets, I think it would be weird. If Howie did the Yankees, it would be weird.
Well,
I think there would be a visceral reaction from the fans.
And here's something, too, that we never really dived too deep into when we talk about the second team in town. And really, the only team that we actually give that could take over the town that's right now number two would be the Mets over the Yankees because we saw that 30 years ago. We saw it happen. Could the Jets ever overtake the Giants? Well, could. I don't think the Nets could overtake the Knicks. We'll find that out this year because the Nets are going to be really good. And the Devils and the Islanders couldn't take over the Rangers. But I think a lot of that comes from just one team was around a lot longer. And then with the Jets, do you know how many people, Michael, became Jet fans because they couldn't get season tickets to the Giants?
Mm-hmm.
I met a lot of people like that. It sounds crazy, but there were a lot of people. I couldn't get tickets, so when the Jets came, I started going to Jet games. So I wanted to see football live, and I fell in love with the Jets. With the Mets, Michael, it was a National League town. The Mets gobbled up all the Dodger and Giant fans. What did those two fan bases have in common? They hated the Yankees. So I don't think anybody, when the Mets started, was going to jump the Yankee ship. I think there's been a rivalry from the get-go. And I think everything else has been friendly with the other teams in town, like when it started, or the gap was just too wide for it to matter. But in the two where the gap is the closest, with the Jets and the Giants and the Mets and the Yankees, there was not a lot of animosity between Jet fans and Giant fans. They never really played each other. And a lot of Giant fans like became Jet fans because they wanted to see a game. I think Yankee fans probably hated the Mets the second they got there. Because it's the National League, then you definitely never played each other. And they were all Dodger and Giant fans that started rooting for the Mets. So I think the animosity was from the get-go. I don't think they ever shared anything in common, ever.
But you would agree, Don, as a Met fan. I mean, because you see it on Twitter. Met fans despise me. Despise me.
I mean, I guess
I'm so identified with the Yankees, and as you've told me off the air and on, the talk show adds a different element to it as well. There's no way that Michael Cage could go from the Yankees to the Mets and not get eviscerated by the fan base.
But there's some, like, I don't think Sam Rosen can ever become the Islander announcer. Right? I think that would be almost impossible. But a lot of it's just, you are associated with that team. You are, to Met fans, you are a Yankee. And
well,
it's been ingrained in our
years.
Soul not to like you. I told you I didn't care for you.
You don't now either. But
oh, come on.
I think the longer you are with an organization, the more you're identified with them. So Gary and I think Gary's been there.
88.
What year?
88.
88. So this will be my 30th year coming up, and it'll be Gary's 42nd. No,
32nd.
So I'll be 30. He'll be 30. I mean, people have grown up with you from the age of 10 to 40, and all of a sudden you're going to make this jump. It would be jarring for people.
But as you said, I don't know if the White Sox are anywhere near close to the Cubs. At least from what I understand from people in Chicago. Like, the gap is way too wide to even consider
wider than White Sox. Wider than Yankees Mets.
Yeah, way wider. And
really?
That's what I, like, really
because
wide.
Because even when the White Sox won the World Series, it's a Cubs town.
So.
I mean, they look at the White Sox, well, they're there.
And a legend, Harry Carey, not only did Peter Cubs and White Sox, he did Cardinals.
Who the Cub fans despise.
Cub fans hate the Cardinals more than they hate the White Sox.
Right. Yeah.
But New York's just a strange bird, man. Like, yeah, here's what would happen. You wouldn't get shot, Michael. But if it was announced today that you were leaving the Yankees to go to the Mets, the Met fan base would make it their job over the next few months to get petitions to make it known to the Mets that they would have no choice but to let you go. And Steve Cohen would have to do it.
I think you're right.
I don't think that's hyperbole. And I think it's the same for
I don't think Yankee fans would do that with Gary.
They'd be upset, though. They wouldn't get it. Now, I don't know if they'd be that as passionate about it because, I don't know, you seem more polarizing than Gary because of the show.
Right.
But I don't think Yankee fans would be happy about it.
It's funny because I was texting back and forth with Len, and I said, wow, you're going from the Cubs to the White Sox. And he goes, it's so funny you just brought that up. He said, I just got texted by Gary. He said, what is it with Chicago? He said, we could never do that in New York. That's what Gary feels. Yeah. And I feel the same way.
The Knicks schedule kind of cool.
What was that?
I think it's actually a cool thing about New York, right?
Yeah, I think they look at the announcers as part of the firmament. The Knicks schedule just came out.
All right.
The Knicks schedule just came out.
Here we go.
Like Steve Martin, the phone books, the new phone books are here. December 23rd, it's a Wednesday. The Knicks open in Indiana against the Pacers.
Oh.
The first home game at Madison Square Garden without any fans, Saturday, December 26th, against Andrew Gunling's Philadelphia 76ers.
Oh. Just take
Andrew,
the L.
Andrew, isn't that a tradition unlike any other?
What, the Knicks' first home game being against Philly? I don't think so.
A Christmas time Sixers game. But it's common.
They played on Christmas Day a few years ago.
But I know you're of the Jewish faith, Peter, but December 26th is not Christmas. It's
Christmas
over,
time, Michael.
It's not Christmas time. December 25th is Christmas.
Are we going to argue this now, too?
You know what we have to do, Peter? We got to scour through the schedule and find out how many 7 o'clock tips there are.
Well, December 23rd is a 7 o'clock tip.
Love it.
First game.
We're off anyway. It makes no difference.
I'll be working.
You'll be working on December 23rd?
That's right.
What are you, an animal? You deserve time off.
No, I'm going to get my time. Don't worry about it. But
I worry about you.
You're working by yourself?
I don't know. The schedule hasn't come out yet.
Well, since you made such a big deal out of it, Peter, it's now a big deal to work by yourself.
I'm just surprised Don's working that week. I'm long gone. Good night and good luck.
And God bless.
I'm home anyway.
So am I.
I'm home too.
Well, I care about the show more than you.
I understand you care about the show. So do I, but you have to take time off.
No, I'm good at, and I will take my time. Don't worry about it.
But, Michael, there's something going on here.
I think so, too. I think that you are such a huge hit with the show that he wants to do the show. Now, I wonder if they force a co-host on him.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Because that's a big thing. Whenever you want to do a show alone, they'll bring in
Don and Grasso.
Yeah, but after all the smooching, how are you going to do any broadcast?
Also a fair point.
What is it really, Peter? Is it really fair?
No, it's not completely fair.
Let's go to Ken in Harlem. Ken, talk to us, baby.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. How you doing?
I want to talk about this Kyrie Irving thing. I'm really upset with that because I think this is an indicator that he's going to be a disruptor on the whole team. You know, it's always him. Remember last year, I remember Don commenting on his rants and raves of the thing. I think this guy Irving is something not right with him, and that he's going to have a difficult impact on the team that's not good. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I did say this, Ken. He's a different bird. I'm not going to say he's strange or whatever, but he definitely thinks differently. He's not your typical athlete. I mean, the guy did come out and say he thought that Earth was flat. Peter thinks that he was tongue-in-cheek. I don't.
I do.
But he's a different bird. He is a different dude.
We'll see how it works out.
You know what? If you ball and win, it's going to be fine.
Oh, and I'm surprised that the first call we got on it was somebody that actually, you know, defended the media and had a problem with it. I think a lot of Net fans were like, what do we care about you?
Wayne in New Hartford. Wayne.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
How you doing?
First off, Michael, I am a Mets fan, so I don't despise you. I watch you every day.
Thank you very much. But you wouldn't want me announcing your team.
Well, you know, I've been watching the Mets since as far back as I can remember, and I've always, you know, the voice I've always known is Gary Cohen.
Right.
So it is like a family. You're just used to that person.
Absolutely.
So it would be a big change.
What do you got, Wayne?
First thing, I think Keith Hernandez would be great on the radio. Just the way he calls a game on TV and he doesn't, you know, him just explaining things would just be really extraordinary.
But you know what's interesting, Wayne, and maybe Michael can answer this? They don't do that in baseball, like a lot, where the radio second announcer is an analyst. You always had two play-by-play guys, right, Michael? Because you want somebody to pick up the slack. You hardly ever see a former player on radio.
Yeah, but it used to be that way, Don. Growing up, it was the TV. It was White, Rizzuto, and Messer, and they would just rotate between the TV and the radio. Do you know that Len Casper loved TV, loved doing radio so much that this is what he did, Don? The days that the Cubs were on national TV and he was off on the television side, he would come to the ballpark and do the fifth inning on radio.
Well, Krug and Kipe do that sometimes.
Let's go to Tom in Chicago. Tom.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. Thanks for making it.
Love the show. Listen every day. I'm a Cub fan. I'm really upset that Casper's leaving, especially going to his crosstown rivals. But
he was really liked by Cub fans, right?
Definitely liked. You know, not Harry status, but nobody will ever have that.
Right.
So any thoughts on who you think the front runner would be to replace him?
I heard it's going to be Chris Myers. I heard. I don't know if that's a sure thing. I know that he did some games and did pre and post, so I heard it could be Chris Myers. But nothing's
Chris Myers!
That's any good chance we can get you to come? I mean, you've talked about how much you love the food here.
Great point.
Well, Tom, I would never. A friend of mine actually texted me today, and you know, we were talking about this. He said, well, what if the Mets and Steve Cohen offered you way more money than you make?
You'd leave.
And no knock on the Mets. I wouldn't do it. I mean, I grew up a Yankee fan. I'd like to have this Yankee job until I'm a very, very old man.
$5 million one season.
No.
Lie.
No.
Come on. That's not having respect for yourself.
I have my dream. How many people in the world have their dream job? Now, you know how much I love money.
Love it.
But I don't need it that badly to leave a place that I love because of the money. And, I mean, for the Cub job, like, if the Yankees let me go tomorrow, that would be, I would call the Cubs immediately and want to take that. I love Chicago, but I would never leave the Yankees for any job. I think the Yankee TV job is the best job in the world.
No, I agree with you, but I think it's easy for you to say no to the $5 million because you know that's never, ever going to happen.
Oh, my God. How dare you?
No, they don't pay $5 million for Michael local Gannon television announcer.
I would.
But, okay, so whatever I make it, yes, right? And they doubled it. I'd say no. I mean, you know, I mean, I think Gary would feel the same way with them with going to the Yankees. I mean, there's a certain, you are part of the, I mean, what if somebody like switched out your father? I mean, you're part of the family. Only in Bewitched does that work. And that didn't work either, Don.
I'd have to look at the ratings.
Dick York, Dick Sargent. I mean, all of a sudden, the guy was different.
It happened.
So, no, I wouldn't take it. So, Yankee fans, rest assured that I'm here until somebody fires me.
Did you watch American Housewife? It's on our network. It's very funny.
No.
They switched out the daughter this year.
They switched out the daughter a long time ago in Roseanne.
Yeah.
And the mom on Fresh Prince.
Did they really? I didn't know that.
What?
I didn't know. I wasn't a big Fresh Prince
Yeah, there was
fan.
A big Aunt Viv switch in the middle of the show.
What Viv was better?
I think people prefer original Aunt Viv.
Original Viv?
I believe if you were to run a poll, most people would say original Aunt Viv.
Did they both look the same?
No, not at all.
Why did they switch? Money? Better actress? The other one quit?
They just did the reunion, so you should watch it and find out. I forget what the issue was.
See, what's interesting is that, like, a lot of the sitcoms, they'll go the route of just switching it out and not caring, right? But, like, a show like MASH, because it was not a strict sitcom, they would go after the heartstrings and kill off the character.
And then emotionally cripple. They would just eliminate a brother without ever explaining it.
Yeah, that was poor Chuck. Apparently, he was on the Don LaGreca college plan. He was there a long time.
All right, we are going to come back and play a little Cover 3 trivia.
Oh, I enjoy this.
Peter and Don love this. Sure. The Michael K. Show.
We get a giant one. We always get Jets.
Yeah, we do get a lot of Jets. Because I was looking at the questions today, and I've got a whole lot of giant questions that we haven't answered or haven't asked.
I did the same thing last week. I was very thrown off because it's almost all Jets.
Yeah. You had a giant one last week?
No, I had another Jets.
Oh, good. I guess because we're the Jet station. I don't know, but it's just odd.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Cover 3 coming up. Then R.J. Bell. Stick around. Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you. You can listen to us on smart speakers, on the ESPN app, on Yes, and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.